really fun night together tonight at 5:30. All right, Ecclesiastes chapter 2. I'm going to read verses 1 through 11. Here's what the word of the Lord says. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I've made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I've made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. I'd like to ask you a question, and I would even encourage you maybe to write down your answer. But the question is this: on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being very low, very unhappy, 10 being as happy as I could ever be, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you in your current season of life right now? You don't have to answer out loud. Just think about it. Just write it down. On a scale of 1 to 10, how happy would you say? And it might sound like a question I don't really intend for you to think about. I'm just throwing out there because that's something that a preacher is supposed to do, just give you a question like that. But I genuinely intend you to think about this. Scale 1 to 10, how happy are you in life right now? If you honestly rated your level of happiness in the way your current season, not just today, but just this current season that you're in, what would it be? And don't just think of the number, but also think about why you would give yourself that number. What's keeping that number from being lower? What's keeping that number from being higher? What number would you give yourself? And the reason I want us to think about this, because it's important for us to consider these kinds of things and these kinds of questions, is because ultimately happiness is what we are all after. I heard a speaker say once that people are not on a truth quest, they're on a happiness quest. And I think there's a lot of truth to that statement, because whether you're 7 or 27 or 87, we're all looking for happiness in some way, pleasure in some way, joy and satisfaction in some way. Now, we're not all looking for it in the same place. We're not all looking for it in the same way, but we're all looking for it. And some of you in this room, you think you found it. Some of you in this room think it's impossible to find. Some of you in this room haven't found it, and you're looking, and you want to know what it looks like to find it. No matter where you are in that journey, we are all of us, are asking some form of the question, is there anything in this world that can truly make a person happy? Maybe you've never said those words or written down those words or thought those exact words, but we're all asking, is there anything in this world that can fully satisfy a person's heart? And not just asking it, but we're all showing through how we live some kind of answer to that question. We're all showing whatever it is we're holding on to right now that this is the answer that I'm trying for now. Don't know if it's going to work, but this is the answer that I'm trying, right or wrong. And this is why I think a book like Ecclesiastes is so relevant for every generation at all times, for all people, and so helpful for our day as well, because Solomon calls himself the preacher here in the book of Ecclesiastes. He is walking through his own story in this book of the answers he went after to try to answer those questions. Is there anything in this world that could ultimately make a person happy? Is there anything in this world that could ultimately satisfy a person? Solomon's saying, I've tried this, I've tried this, I've tried this, I've tried this. Last week we saw he tried wisdom, he tried knowledge, he tried learning. And he said, well, wisdom and folly, I don't really see the point. Yes, wisdom's a little bit better than folly, but in the end, both the wise man and the foolish man die. So ultimately, there's no lasting satisfaction there because no amount of wisdom can change reality. No amount of wisdom can change death. No amount of wisdom can give lasting satisfaction. And then today, he's going to go down the path of pleasure, the path of enjoying different aspects of life. Now, just want to give you a heads up here. This is not going to be the kind of thing of whatever number you gave yourself just now. By the end of this sermon, it'll be a 10. That's not where I'm going. That's not where Solomon goes here yet. But it's more so going to be, here's why none of us are at a 10. And answering that reality too. So two things that we're going to see as we follow Solomon's pursuit of pleasure. We're going to see what pleasure promises and then what pleasure actually delivers. What pleasure promises and what pleasure delivers. So let's look at the first one. What pleasure promises. As we come to this next episode of The Preacher's Search for Satisfaction, this one goes in a lot of different directions. This is not just this one narrow path. It is one path, but there's a lot of little extra paths off this one path of pleasure that he's walking down. And even through all that, the core goal is the same throughout his whole trial here. Look at verse 1. You'll see what it is. Verse 1, he says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. So he's thinking, he's talking to himself, and he says, I'm going to test my heart with pleasure. The heart being not just this physical organ that's beating in your body. We saw this last week. But the center of a person, the center of your being, that shapes who you are and what you do and what you're living for. He said, I'm going to test my heart with pleasure. Wisdom was a dead end. So now he's going down this one to see if it's going to lead somewhere differently. And he says, I'm going to see how my heart responds to every different kind of joy that I can find under the sun. I am going to find an answer to the question of whether or not there is something in this world that can make me whole. Whether or not there is something in this world that can satisfy this gnawing emptiness I feel. And he's not going to leave anything left untried on this journey. It's almost like if you've been in this scenario before, you're walking through Costco or someplace like that where there's just samples, beautiful, magical samples all over the place as you're walking through the store. And you say, yes, I'll try this. Yes, I'll try this. Yes, I'll try this. Yes, I'll try this. I'm not sure I've ever actually bought a product that I tried a sample of. I just want to eat the sample because that's why you go to Costco, to eat those kinds of things. And this is what he's doing. I'm going to sample this. I'm going to sample this. I'm going to try everything to see if any of it satisfies. But just think about this for a minute. Imagine what this would be like. Imagine having the resources and the opportunities to be able to try everything that's out there to bring you joy or pleasure or satisfaction. Anything your heart desires, you can have it. Because all that matters at this moment is just to have a good time. Just find a good time. What would you choose? What would you go after? If money and time and whatever resources were not a non-issue, what would you go after? Well, just as those dreams start to form in your mind and in my mind, the preacher speaks up and interrupts the whole thing. And he says this in the second part of verse 1. After he says, enjoy yourself, he says, but behold, this also was vanity. That word behold, you're going to see it come up again towards the end of the chapter, but we've seen this before. That word behold, we don't say that a lot, but it means pay attention. Notice this, almost like as he talked about that, he knew our minds would start running to whatever pleasure or joy we would chase after. And he interrupts that and says, quick thing, just want you to know, this was vanity too. This was emptiness. It was short-lived. It didn't satisfy because the satisfaction of what I went after, it didn't last. And you may start to think here, well, if Solomon came to this conclusion from the very beginning, surely he must have missed something. Surely there's some kind of pleasure, maybe even some kind of joy or pleasure or experience that exists in our world today that didn't exist in his day, that if he could have had that, that would have really brought it full circle for him and finally satisfied him. Well, he's going to grab you and I by the hand and walk us on this journey and say, let me show you what I tried. Let me show you what I went after. Here's what happens in verse 2. He says, I said of laughter, it is mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? I search with my heart how to cheer my body with wine. My heart still guiding me with wisdom and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. He said, I went after laughter, after having a good time, like the kind of laughter you can't breathe, you're laughing so hard. And he said, laughter ultimately could not lift me out of my emptiness. And then he said, I went after wine, after alcohol, after just enjoying the pleasure of that. And he said, I got to the point where when I looked in the glass of wine, all I saw was the reflection of my own emptiness, of my own dissatisfaction. And it's interesting, he says, did you see this little phrase tucked in the middle of verse 3? He's going to say it again in verse 9, but there he says, I search with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom. He throws that in there and throws it in again at verse 9. And he's saying, I kept my wits about me. I knew what my goal was. I didn't lose my senses in all this. I had my goal in mind to see if I could find satisfaction, and neither of those things worked. Having a good time, drinking wine, enjoying the pleasure of that with friends, it didn't work. And so he keeps looking. Here's where he goes next, verse 4. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. The vastness of everything that he went after here can be seen in all the different verbs that you see in that short little section I read, verses 4 through 8. You see, he made, he built, he planted, he bought, he gathered, he acquired. And everything is plural. It's not just I built a house. I built houses and planted vineyards and planted trees and parks and gardens and got singers and concubines and had possessions. It's all plural, just stacked up with stuff and people. And we can be honest here. Isn't this, though we probably would not say it out loud, and we probably would not say it out loud, especially in a church building, isn't this kind of the lifestyle that we all secretly want? Maybe not exactly the things that he says here, but the kind of beautiful things enjoyed in beautiful places with beautiful people and all the pleasures and joys and experiences that come with that. Isn't that what we all secretly want in some way or another? Wouldn't this be paradise in some way to be able to do that? Having whatever you want, whenever you want, however you want, you get it. Well, it's meant to sound like paradise, I think, but in kind of an unexpected way. Because part of this description might sound familiar to some of you. Because he's making, he's planting, he's watering these great gardens and groves of fruit trees. And these exact verbs and nouns are the same that show up in the book of Genesis. In Genesis chapter 1 and 2, chapter 3, they all show up when they're used to describe the Garden of Eden. Because it's almost as if Solomon is trying to create his own version of the Garden of Eden. It's almost as if he's trying to create his own version of paradise, but he's missing who made it paradise. We'll get to that in a second. But the fact that Solomon is trying to create his own Garden of Eden here, it doesn't just reveal Solomon's heart, it also reveals our hearts too. Ever since the day Adam and Eve believed the lie that their lives would be incomplete unless they got one more tree, you and I have all believed the same lie. I'll be satisfied if I can just get one more fill in the blank. We think we can find paradise on earth if we could just get one more car, one more follower, one more new house, one more relationship, one more toy, one more financial step up, one more career move up, one more school achievement, one more sports achievement, one more adrenaline rush, one more like, one more comment, one more weekend, one more vacation. If I could just get one more of whatever that thing is for you, then I'll be satisfied. Then I'll have paradise. Then I'll have everything that I need. But it's almost like when we do that, it's like when you, if you took a deflated balloon that you really wanted to inflate, you really wanted to blow up, and you brought it up to one of those Coke machines that has every flavor known to man in front of it. You know the ones I'm talking about that have the touch screen? It's very stressful. It's very overwhelming. And it's like, I just want Dr. Pepper. I don't need 17 flavors of Dr. Pepper. And you come up to it, and you could take your deflated balloon up there, and you could say, all right, I'm going to get vanilla, cherry, strawberry, Coke, whatever, and try to, it's not going to inflate your balloon. Well, I could try to, I'm going to try a Sprite with lemonade and this and try to fill that. It's not going to inflate your balloon. Well, I'll try a little bit healthy. I'm going to try the sparkling water with this flavor and this flavor. It's not going to inflate your balloon. Well, what's the problem? The problem's not the machine. It's never going to fill it up. No flavor that you pick is going to fill it up because that's not what fills a balloon. Air is what fills a balloon. And for us to try to fill it with something different is never going to work. You can keep trying and keep trying and keep trying, but it's going to be dead end, dead end, dead end, dead end. This is the promise that all the pleasures of this world hold out to us. The next pleasure is the one that's finally going to satisfy you. Well, that's hard to deal with because that's what the one before that said. And that's what the one before that said. And that's what the one before that said. And the preacher here wants to save us some time and show us what does not work. He's trying to say, you don't have to go all the way down this path. I went all the way down the path for you, and I'm trying to show you where it led and where it ended up. You can go after the next fun time. You can go after the next round of drinks with friends. You can go after the next big purchase, next big project, next career advancement, next romantic experience. But if you're looking at any of those things to make you matter, to give you meaning, to fill your emptiness, it will not work because they're not what's meant to fill you to begin with. You're asking them to do something they were never meant to do. It's going to be a dead end. And here's why. Because the second part that we see this morning, not just what pleasure promises, but also what pleasure actually delivers. And Solomon, as he's taken us on this journey, he sums up what this pleasure-seeking journey he went on, what it ultimately led to. And here's how he sums it up, verse 9. He says, "So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil." If we stopped right there, it would actually sound like he reached the mountaintop he was after. He says in verse 9, "I became great and surpassed everyone who was before me." No one ever had the level of things that I had. No one ever experienced the level of things that I experienced. I was on the mountaintop. I had fame. I had fortune. I had success. I had high after high after high. Who wouldn't be happy in the midst of all that greatness? And in some ways, it worked. Because he says in the middle of verse 10, "Whatever my eyes I desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil." There was enjoyment. He did have fun. there were things that felt good. And in reality, a lot of the things he lists out, not everything, but a lot of things he lists out are good gifts from God. They're not all wrong, bad things. And he says, it did feel good. I did enjoy it. I did feel satisfaction in some ways. But then he steps back and he looks around at everything that he has bought, everything that he has made, everything that he has experienced and accomplished. And here's what he says, verse 11. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. You might have heard a similar phrase there that kind of bookends this section of verses 1 through 11. Remember at the beginning in verse 1, he said, behold, it was all vanity. I said, enjoy myself, but behold, it was all vanity. And then he says it again in the middle of verse 11. Behold, pay attention, look, make sure you see this, he says. It was all vanity. It was all empty. It was all short-lived. It was all felt good for a bit, but then eventually faded away and didn't last. He kind of stands back and looks at all of it, and he says, after everything I've gained, I haven't really gained anything. After everything I achieved, I haven't really achieved anything. I had it all, but it wasn't enough. All didn't satisfy, because in every place that he chased after pleasure, he found some enjoyment. But behind that enjoyment, there was still emptiness. There was still dissatisfaction. None of it was lasting. It's almost like, for those of you that have had this kind of experience before, if there's this really hard video game that you're playing and you beat level after level and you're into it and you're excited about it, you wake up thinking about playing it and beating the next level, you come home, start playing it, beating the next level, and this is bringing you so much excitement, anticipation, and joy, and finally you beat the whole game. And then the same thing that brought you all this excitement, anticipation, and joy, it's not very exciting anymore because you've already accomplished it. And that's what he says. He says, I got to the end of it, and even after everything I did, I wasn't satisfied. So the important thing for us is this. We have to think about what went wrong. What did he miss? Why didn't this work? Surely this would have worked. Well, let me scan back through the first section of verses. Let me reread verses 4 through 8 for us. I want to emphasize some words, and I think that's going to maybe lead us to a clue of why this didn't work. Look at verse 4. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves. Skip down a few words. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold. And I think you're starting to hear it. I, me, 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 myself, myself, myself. And it all kicked off with what he said to himself at the end of verse 1, enjoy yourself. To enjoy yourself is to drink in only what yourself can provide. And when we look to anything in this world to satisfy us, we are looking to what's created and we're looking to what's temporary. And as people who are created and temporary, we're never going to be satisfied by other created and temporary things. They only have so much they can offer us. Now, let's be clear. I said this a minute ago, and I want to say it, make sure it's clear. Not everything Solomon did here was wrong. Not everything Solomon did here was immoral. Many of the things were good. Many of the things are gifts from God that you and I still enjoy today. And many of the things he pursued with wisdom. But even good moral gifts from God will not satisfy us. Whether it's something good or bad, trying to satisfy yourself and put yourself first will always fail to satisfy yourself, ironically enough. Whether moral or immoral, putting pleasure and satisfaction first will always fail to provide pleasure and satisfaction. And Solomon parades all these achievements. He parades all these enjoyments in front of us. And then he tells us that all of it was ultimately not enough. The laughter went away. The wine didn't last. Today, most of Solomon's great projects are just dust blowing across the desert. His experiences ended. And this is why I say what pleasure promises and what pleasure delivers, because pleasure in this world has a way of promising more than it can ever deliver. I love the way one author said it that I was reading this week. He said, pleasure's marketing department is much better than its manufacturing department. And it's true. There's promise after promise after promise that doesn't come full circle. Now, the point of this part of Ecclesiastes is not to stop you and I from enjoying life. This part of Ecclesiastes, the book of Ecclesiastes as a whole, the Bible as a whole, is not saying replace all laughter with prayer or all parties canceled, now only serious Bible studies. That's not what he's saying. And actually, I think Christians of all people should be known for the highest joy and pleasure and enjoyment of the good gifts God gives us in life. And there's more to come on that later in the book. But the point here for now is to show us the emptiness of pursuing any pleasure as the ultimate goal in life. And the challenge for you and I here is that few of us probably believe what the preacher's trying to tell us. Whatever it is that you think Solomon should have tried but didn't is where you think satisfaction comes from. Well, I'm sure he didn't get to whatever fills in the blank for you. That's where you think meaning in life comes from. That's where you think satisfaction is found, where meaning in life is found. But Solomon is shouting to us and he's saying, listen, it is going to be, if that's what you're after, it is going to be a never-ending pursuit of never being satisfied. You'll go from one well to another and you'll never stop being thirsty, because the wells of pleasure-seeking people are always empty. And there's never enough in the world to satisfy us. So remember, these first few weeks of the study, Solomon is tearing down in order to later in the book start to build up. He has to deconstruct and demolish things that you and I hold up as the deal and the main thing and the thing that's going to finally satisfy us. And he's saying, let me slowly take this one apart for you. Let me slowly take this one apart for you. Let me slowly take this one apart for you so that behind them and above them, you can see what I'm really talking about. And each path he takes us down is an invitation to look at our own lives and see how we might be chasing down that same path. And maybe we're not running down the path, but maybe we've stood at the beginning of it and said, man, that looks like it's going to be really good. I've had some friends go down it. They seem to enjoy it. Maybe I should try it. But there's more Solomon is going to teach us on this subject. But for now, just let it land on you this way. May the reality and the truth that Solomon brings in front of us, may it break the spell that you and I are under sometimes. May it break the spell that there's something you're going after right now. There's a pleasure or joy or some kind of happiness in life, some kind of experience in life that you're going after, thinking about going after, already chasing after, and let it break the spell here to say, it's not going to work. It's not going to satisfy you. When that temptation begins to kind of get in your mind and get a grip on how you think and how you live and what you want and what you're after and what you think matters and what you think doesn't, let this break the spell and let him tell you, hey, I've tried it. It's not going to work. It's not going to make you feel how you think it's going to make you feel. And over all of this, see this whole section as evidence that God is pursuing you and pursuing me. Solomon is showing us the emptiness of life under the sun. Solomon is showing us that even while we're chasing the wind, the Lord is chasing after us, even if we don't see it. The very fact that a book like this is in the Bible is a merciful, gracious act of God to say, let me save you some time and pain and heartache and show you none of this is going to work in this world. And it's evidence that the Lord is chasing after us to show all the emptiness that we feel is eventually only matched, and more than that, by his fullness, by his character, by his promises, that there's a treasure that outlasts this life under the sun. Jesus says this, that there's a treasure in heaven where moth and rust cannot destroy. That there's a joy of a different kind in this world that outlasts life under the sun, because the psalmist says in Psalm 4, you have given me more joy than they have when their wine and grain abound. And just like Psalm 63 says, because your steadfast love is better than life, my lips will praise you. We might find ourselves on one of those paths, wisdom, pleasure. Next week is work and achievement. But we also need to look around and realize if we find ourselves at a dead end, at a loss of what to look for next, you look right behind you, the Lord's been following you down that path the whole time. Through the book of Ecclesiastes, through other good things in his word and promises that he's given to his people, to say, I have something that does bring satisfaction. I have a pleasure and joy that nothing in this world can touch because it didn't come from this world. So we're going to keep looking, and we'll find what he's talking about, because Solomon's going to lead us there too. Let's pray together.